Lipcast Slovakia, the podcast about Slovak literature in English. Welcome to episode 5 of Lipcast Slovakia. I'm Julia Sherwood, a literary translator based in London, and today I'll be talking to Janet Livingston, who describes herself as a multilingual world traveler who favors humor over violence. Janet was born in Boston, Massachusetts, and studied languages at McGill University in Montreal and international relations at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. After 1989, the Velvet Revolution, she ventured into Czechoslovakia and spent 16 years living in Bratislava. She has since moved back to the US. Hi, Janet. Welcome to Lipcast Slovakia.
Hi, Julia. It's so nice to be with you.
Nice to talk to you. Humor over violence. I guess that maxim has come in quite handy in recent times. Seattle, where you now live, had one of the first coronavirus outbreaks in the US. And over the past few weeks, like many other cities across the country, it's seen massive protests following the killing of George Floyd. How has all this affected your life and work?
Quite a lot. It's been a very unsettling time. We did have basically the first outbreak in the United States because of this region's ties with China. So there were many people traveling back and forth. So essentially, I've not been to my office in 3 months. I have not seen my coworkers. We're all working from home, which is quite isolating. I'm fine, but I have noticed a kind of insidious stress that comes from being alone, staying at home, being afraid to go out, and so forth. And the protests are another layer on top of that, also rather shocking and unsettling, although I'm on the side of supporting the protests, because I must say that the African Americans in this country have been mistreated and abused and economically disadvantaged for centuries, and I think it's time that we fixed it. So I did venture out to a march 3 days ago with mask on. Everybody had their masks on, and it was very powerful.
That's quite inspiring and good to hear that everyone had their mask on. Now, I guess these unsettling times made that culture shock that you must have experienced after coming back and to live in the US after many years, even it must have thrown it into an even more sharper focus. So did you find the country had changed much even before all this happened when you came back?
Yes. So coming back after so many years in Europe is quite a change. It's really quite profound. And a lot of people don't understand that even between the US and Europe, where you could say that, you know, US culture came out of European culture, you could say, well, there's not that big a difference, so why is it a shock? But it is. We've evolved in separate directions, most European countries versus the US, I would say. So when I came back, I had to deal with a lot of new jargon and sort of cultural phenomena that I had maybe witnessed from afar, from Slovakia, only on the internet. And I came back to live in a city that I'm not from, in a different part of the country. And those cultural differences for me between U.S. cities are quite significant. So it was a shock for me. I think that the U.S. is dealing with a lot of very big systemic problems. Life here has become more expensive and has deteriorated since I last lived here in 2002. That was the last time I lived here. And it's a little bit scary and disappointing. It's expensive to have health insurance. Food has become very expensive. When I came from Slovakia, where bread costs €1, and I came to Seattle, where bread costs $5 or $6, I was angry for about a year. And then I just had to get over it. You don't have any choice. You can't go and scream at the bakers. So, you know, and it's fragile. It's fragile here. If you lose your job here, you're in trouble quite quickly unless you have lots of savings. And so, you know, it's not the golden roads paved with gold as once thought.
Right. And so apart from the expensive bread and general health insurance, what do you miss most about living in Europe and Bratislava in particular?
Oh, where to begin? I miss Bratislava because I really have a lot of wonderful relationships there, so many friends who I miss. And I miss them not only because they're my friends, but because the quality of the relationships in a culture like Slovakia is different from what it is here. People get closer much more quickly. They touch base more frequently. You can go out for coffee and sit around and drink coffee without feeling guilty that you're not working and you're not being productive and you're not, you know, running to your next meeting the way we are here. It's just a different way of life, a slightly slower pace. And I miss Europe in general, just because of the lifestyle, the quality of the scenery, the architecture, the food, the idea that you can get in the car and drive for 3 hours and be in a completely different culture, or even 1 hour. Yeah, I was very much at home in Europe, and now I'm trying to be at home in my own country.
Now, your being at home in Bratislava, I think one great evidence of that was your mastery of the Slovak language. When I first met you, I couldn't believe that you weren't a native speaker. So can you tell me what your secret is? I mean, how did you master it so well? And then how did you get into translating?
Oh, Julia, flattery will get you everywhere.
No, but it's true. It's absolutely true. And I think anyone who's met you would confirm that.
Well, thank you very much. From you, that's a true compliment. So, you know, it's funny. I've always enjoyed imitating people and accents and sounds. And I was just born this way. I was born with an ear. And luckily, I was also born with, apparently, with a brain that can handle language and grammar and stuff. So I began to learn languages when I was 7 years old. My mother, who was a huge Francophile who had lived in Paris for a year, just announced when I was seven that I was going to learn French. And, you know, when you're seven, you say, okay. So I started then, and it came easily, and I played the piano. And so this is my main sort of strongest sense. If you take the five senses, my strongest one is definitely auditory. For example, my nose doesn't work very well, so I don't smell things that well, but I can hear everything, and noise bothers me terribly. And with the language study, it just continued throughout my life. In elementary school, I had Spanish, and high school, I had French. In college, I studied Spanish and Italian, and then finally Russian. And Russian was, of course, the most challenging because it was not a Romance language. I sweated for 2 to 3 years over Russian grammar before I could actually have a conversation, believe it or not. And then what clinched it is that I got to study abroad. I was in what was still then Leningrad, which is now St. Petersburg, for a semester, so 5 months. And I was able to use that as a base for learning Slovak, because anyone who speaks a Slavic language knows that all the Slavic languages are related. And for me, Slovak grammar was really not a great big leap from Russian grammar. All of the ideas of the cases and the inflections, the aspects. So I learned Slovak just by being in Slovakia. I actually, and it astounds me actually, I astound myself that I never studied Slovak formally. And I don't know why that is. I think probably I was just too busy and too stressed out to stop and study or to go to a course. I had a job that took me all over Czechoslovakia in the early days in the 90s. And then when I came back in the 2000s, I had two children and was busy working and taking care of my kids, etc. So I learned Slovak just by talking to people and reading and having some of my wonderful Slovenčinarki friends, my linguist friends, correct me later. My children were able to correct me because they grew up speaking Slovak. And then translating. So translating obviously pushed me forward quite a lot in terms of how well I spoke and how well I understood. I'm still not there. I'm still working. I just wanted to tell you that when I first started working in Slovakia, I caused a whole bunch of problems because of my inability to express myself really precisely, that we were expecting them to, you know, pay for a teacher to come, or I would go to Eastern Slovakia and have, you know, be questioned. The usual question was, you know, how do you like Slovakia, or how do you find Eastern Slovakia? And I would always say, well, the people here are so warm. And I would directly translate that to to warm in Slovak with the classic mistake, right? I did it all the time. Ah, ľudia sú tu takí teplí, you know, and I would be in a room with a dean of the economics university in Košice in a room, and I would say this to him. And in English, it essentially means, oh, everybody here is gay. And it was just incredible how people in Slovakia managed to be so polite. They never protested. They never explained to me what I had just said. They just swallowed it and kept going.
Right, so politeness, main characteristic of Slovaks. Okay, so let's now talk about literature, the authors and works that you've translated. So one of the first, or maybe the first full-length work of prose that you translated was Irina Brezhna's Na slepačích krídlach, The Best of All Worlds. So what attracted you to this book, and what was it like translating it? Because it was actually originally written in German, right?
Yes, I began this journey with Irina Brezhna because I saw her give a talk, and I was absolutely charmed by her and by the humor of the reading. The text was incredibly humorous and ironic, and it was a very, very insightful observation of times, you know, socialist times in Czechoslovakia. So I approached her immediately after the reading and said, hi, you know, I'm an American living here, and I translate, and I loved your reading, and if you'd ever like to get together and talk about translating bits and pieces of your work, or any, or just have coffee, I'd love it. And she immediately said yes, and I was, you know, shocked and delighted. So I met her that way, and she suggested that we work together on Na slepačích krídlach, and it was in German, but it had been in the meantime translated back into Slovak by our colleague, someone you know very well, Jana Tríková. And so the text existed in Slovak, and Irina was willing to have me translate into English from the Slovak version, because I don't speak German, I do, but it's, you know, really elementary. So there was no way I could have translated it from German. And we worked on it very hard. The advantage with Irina was that she, although she was exacting in what she wanted in terms of the translation, she was also willing to spend an enormous amount of time with me to make sure that the text came out the way she had intended it originally. So I spent quite a lot of time with her, including going to Switzerland to stay with her for several days. And it was a fabulous experience. We became good friends. Sadly, it's not published.
No, that's really very, very sad. And then you had a similar experience with another book you translated, Monika Kompaníková's Piatá loď, both number 5. You've translated an excerpt and the whole book, and still it took a very, very long time. Now I'm touching wood and knocking on wood and crossing my fingers. But if everything goes right, it should be published next year.
Please do all of those things.
Yes, with Siegel Books. But now, can you say a little bit about what it was like translating Monika Kompanikova's book, what attracted you to it, and then also why do you think there is such a resistance to publishing Slovak books in the Anglophone book market?
When I read it, I was just floored by her incredible ability to create an emotional atmosphere. Monika creates a kind of lilting loneliness, that kind of quiet pain that builds. It was devastating to read, even though there's nothing terrible or, you know, there's no blood, nobody dies. It was just this heartbreaking, lonely story of a girl who lived with a mother who had her as a teenager, and there was just hardly any relationship there, and she just was aching for, you know, her mother's love, and then she kind of adopts some babies. I won't divulge the book, but it's this whole the inner dialogue of a girl who is alone, absolutely alone, in the city. On the second part of your question, if I may, it's interesting how you phrase it, that there's a resistance. I don't know myself how big that resistance is. I mean, you do. But what I've learned from translating another author, which maybe we'll talk about later, that if you're lucky enough to find an agent, it is possible. I think that probably the biggest factor, at least in the U.S. market, is that Slovakia is just really unknown. It's not a country people know about. It's not a country that people can differentiate from Slovenia or from any other part of former Yugoslavia, for that matter. Slovak literature does not come with a name like Milan Kundera. It just doesn't. So it's more difficult to convince publishers who right now are being barraged by the entire world. I mean, publishers here are publishing all sorts of literature and translation. It's very hot. So they've got literally the whole world to choose from. And to compete with that is, you know, it's quite daunting.
Yeah, well, tell me about it. But so you started... you mentioned agents, and I think this is the case of Jana Beňová, who managed to find an agent, and the result was this really great success story. She actually had two books published in your translation. So could you tell us a little bit about those two books and how you worked with Jana Beňová and so on?
Absolutely. So again, I was approached, and Jana Beňová had this the blessing of a lovely agent. So Jana was a completely different experience from Irena Brezhna and Monika Kompanikova. Jana is something between a prose writer and a poet. She creates a lot of visual images. She's very efficient with language, and her language is truly her own. Her way of expressing herself is really unique. And at first, I wasn't sure what to do with it. I mean, her books are sort of, they're like visual auditory mosaics. One should really read them more than once in order for it all to kind of come into focus and kind of fall into place. And so it was challenging. And really with Jana, as with Irena, and even with Monika, the relationship between myself and the author was very, very key. I mean, truly, with Jana the most of all, because of the way she writes. So we became co-workers on this project. And when we found a modus operandi that worked for both of us, it became like this co-creation process. And she was able to explain to me exactly what she wanted. She had a rhythm in mind. She wanted this kind of a rhythm. She wanted this word at the end of the sentence. And, you know, at first I was a little thrown by that. I thought, well, this is English, you know, and rhythm in English is different. And So we gradually worked together. In the beginning, I went along with her a lot, and then she came to trust me, and so then I could suggest ways to craft the sentences and so forth. And the result was really good, and it was an astonishing experience. And the critics for both of the books, the first one is called Seeing People Off, which is a book about four friends in Bratislava, and the second one is called Away, Away, which is a short novella based on The Snow Queen by Hans Christian Andersen, which takes place in completely contemporary times. It you know, you can't really see that it's based on The Snow Queen unless you really pay attention. And the critics here in the U.S. Loved it. We were written up in the Kenyon Journal, which is really well-known literary journal, and a number of others. NPR did a great review, and the sales have been okay. And so I'm really proud of our work, I have to say. And Jana's very happy.
Well, you should really be proud. And I think having these reviews is amazing, because getting published is difficult enough, but then actually getting reviews is another huge mountain one has to climb. So Irina Brezhna, Monika Kompanikova, Jana Beňová, all women. Now, did you deliberately set out to redress the imbalance that's been talked about quite a lot recently about the women writers being underrepresented in publishing in general and in translation in particular? Or did it just happen?
That's a very nice question. I think in my case it just happened. I have translated men, but I will say, so the women, the novels that I've translated by women are the largest works that I've done, and those just happened. But I will say that I've very much enjoyed working with women. I think so far it's been somewhat easier to work with women. It's easier to get close to them. It's easier to sort of find a middle ground so far. I don't want to generalize. I mean, obviously, there are millions of writers in the world. But it's been a great chance to help some of those women be read and be recognized. And I still have hopes for Irina Brezhna. I think she's a fabulous writer. She's done very well in her home, in what is now her home country of Switzerland. So maybe someday we'll see her book published. The sequel to the book that I've translated has been published and was extremely well received. She got the prize, literary prize in Switzerland.
Do you have any other translating plans at the moment? I mean, you currently reinvented yourself as a coach and leadership development consultant, but I do hope that you haven't given up on translating altogether, because there aren't that many of us.
No, I'm still honored to belong to the very exclusive club of literary translators who translate from Slovak to English. Really, I will never give up translating. I am just taking a break now because my life has become very full between having a full-time job working with Boeing, doing leadership development work with Asia, which has taken me 180 degrees in the other direction, and doing some other projects on the side. Living here, I will be very honest, living here means one having to be very focused on making a living. And translating is a beautiful profession, but it's difficult to make a good living doing it. I can very much see myself retiring in Slovakia and translating for years. Hopefully I'll be healthy into my old age. We'll see. I'm fine now. But this is my hope. I do wish that I could get very short assignments and sort of do them on the side here, but right now I'm taking a break.
Well, that is understandable in the circumstances. So in these really challenging times that we're living in, and weird and difficult, Can you maybe mention a book that has given you strength or inspiration, not necessarily a Slovak book?
Yes, sure. I'm reading some very diverse things right now. First of all, I'm reading a nonfiction book called The Body Keeps the Score, which is all about trauma and the brain and what happens to people who experience trauma, and they can carry it through their entire life. And that's written by a Dutch psychiatrist who lives in the States. His name is Bessel van der Kolk. Mm-hmm. And that's really fascinating. I read Madeleine Albright's Fascism, which is extremely relevant, unfortunately, right now, which really filled in a lot of holes in my historical knowledge and was very, very interesting. And finally, I've just started Olga Tokarczuk's Flights.
Oh.
And wow, book, wow. Yes. I'm blown away. I mean, this is really, you know, I've read various things in the past years, but this book is truly literature. It's just, it's rich and it's beautiful. And the description is just so clear and just artistic. It's really a work of art. I'm so glad she won. Her Nobel Prize is well-deserved. And I've just started, so I'm really kind of looking forward to continuing. I'm going to take it slowly.
It is a book to savor in short bursts, and it is really wonderful. I actually just finished her Books of Jacob, which is huge. It's 900 pages, so just holding it in my hand was difficult. It's heavy, but it was well worth it. Anyway.
Oh my God, you cannot see my face. I can't imagine. Good for you. That will be my next project in a few years.
I think it's coming out in English next year in Jennifer Croft's translation. So
yes, great.
It's quite something. Anyway, I think we have run out of time. So many, many thanks, Janet, for coming on Litka Slovakia. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much, Julia. Likewise, it's always lovely to speak to a colleague in the field.